From Lansford to Katanning, Mount Pleasant to Sealands Grove, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Wolf administration has a history of overspending. Now, State Treasurer Stacy Garrity has a tool to track spending and make it easy to identify when an agency or department goes over budget. She is here to explain. The Children's Home of Reading provides quality treatment to children and families in crisis with a wide array of programs and services. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Dr. Vincent LaSorsa of the Children's Home in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And it is being called a responsible budget, but it hikes spending far above the rate of inflation. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on Pennsylvania's new state budget. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Treasurer Stacy Garrity in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania's funding cap for tax credit scholarships got the single biggest boost in program history when the state's new fiscal year budget was approved at the end of June. In addition to a $300 million increase to basic education funding, the Educational Improvement Tax Credit, or EITC program, got a $40 million infusion that will allow it to award an extra 13,000 scholarships for students seeking a private education. According to the Center Square, the state budget placed three-quarters of its $10 billion in economic stimulus and tax surplus dollars into the rainy day fund, which had been significantly depleted. Pennsylvania's mask mandate was lifted this past week as the Department of Health reports 75.2% of Keystone State residents have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, and 59.8% of those aged 18 and over are fully vaccinated. The widespread deployment of the vaccine is being credited with a dramatic drop in new cases of the virus, with just a couple of hundred new cases per day being diagnosed. Masks, however, are still required on airplanes and other forms of mass transit, as well as at hospitals and medical facilities. You may have noticed your favorite restaurant isn't open as many hours or even as many days as usual. That's because of a worker shortage triggered by ongoing federal unemployment supplemental benefits that won't end until this fall. In the meantime, Pennsylvania's unemployment rate is significantly higher than the national average, at least in part due to the absence of a requirement that those on unemployment must seek work to continue receiving benefits. That will change on July 8th, when a requirement to seek employment kicks in. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. From a new tool to track Wolf Administration spending to a program to help workers whose employers don't provide retirement programs to save for retirement, State Treasurer Stacy Garrity is energizing one of the Commonwealth's oldest elective offices. Treasurer Garrity defeated a popular incumbent last year in an upset election, and over the past 6 months has moved quickly to put her own stamp on the office. Stacy, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Stacy, before we start talking about your experience over your first 6 months as Pennsylvania State Treasurer and a number of the issues that you have been dealing with that we want to discuss, tell us a little bit about yourself. For many Pennsylvanians, you're a new statewide elected official. What should folks know about Stacy Garrity?
First of all, thanks for having me on your program, Loman. It's great to be here. So I am from Bradford County, so that is one of the more rural counties in the Commonwealth, and I like to joke that we have more cows than people. But I did spend 34 years in manufacturing, working my way up to become the first female vice president at Global Tungsten and Powders, which is the world's largest tungsten smelter, well, except for China, so in the Western world. Also spent 30 years in the United States Army Reserves. I'm an MP, which is military police, and I had three combat deployments to Iraq. My last one was in 08-09, where I was the acting battalion commander at Camp Buka, where we had 7,000 detainees, and I had 1,200 soldiers under my command.
Let's talk about your first 6 months in office. You came in to office here last January, you and Tim DeFore as U.S. State Treasurer, Tim as Auditor General. Both of you won your elections last year in somewhat of an upset. But what have you found in arriving in Harrisburg? Is it what you expected? Have there been any surprises?
First of all, I would say mine was a total upset, Logan, because, of course, there was a fairly popular incumbent in office, ex-deputy mayor under Ed Rendell. But we did have a wonderful transition. So I hit the ground running. It's been a very busy almost 6 months in office. So transitioning out of the pandemic into a more, I guess you'd call it a new normal work environment. We've been working on that. Also spent a lot of time with labor and industry to fight fraud in our unemployment compensation programs. I do sit on 16 boards. And so, of course, the board that takes most of my time, and you won't be surprised about that, is PESERS. We've also been pushing back against the Biden's administration, their bullying of banks to divest from oil and gas. And, of course, we all know that's about 300,000 jobs in the Commonwealth. So I don't think we should be picking winners and losers. We also just upgraded our unclaimed property site, and I need to mention we have $4 billion, that's with a B, dollars of unclaimed property. And, gosh, that means 1 out of 10 Pennsylvanians have unclaimed property. So if you put your name onto that website, I'm sure either you or family members or friends have unclaimed property, and it's very easy to claim right now with our upgrade. And each claim is just about $2,000. I also want to mention that we also have just under 700 military decorations. So these could be things like Purple Hearts, Bronze Stars, Meritorious Service Medals, all kinds of campaign ribbons, dog tags, you name it. And so we're really putting a big emphasis on returning those military decorations to either the service member or their families if they're deceased. And so, of course, being a veteran myself, that's very near and dear to my heart.
Can you give us the website where folks can go, Stacy, if they want to find out if there are unclaimed decorations or if somebody has unclaimed property?
You just go to patreasury.gov/unclaimed property, and there is a special tab for the military decorations right there.
It being the first part of July, we have the new fiscal year underway, and the state budget actually got done a little bit early this year. I'd be interested in your thoughts on the state budget. Did you see areas where there was fiscal progress and also any areas where you think maybe we still have some work to do?
I thought the General Assembly was very smart to save the vast bulk of the federal funding. Everybody thinks there's going to be a fiscal cliff that comes in 2 years. I also applaud the General Assembly for rejecting all of the governor's proposed tax hikes. It will take, you know, years for Pennsylvania's economy to fully rebound from the pandemic, and I attribute a lot of that to Governor Wolf's arbitrary and inconsistent shutdown orders that I saw in the private sector. Businesses across the state, particularly small businesses that are the backbone of the Commonwealth, they've been devastated. Another area where I thought was very good was they added $2.5 billion to the state's rainy day fund, and I think that was a really great decision by the General Assembly. So our rainy day fund was just a little over 2 days of spending. And adding that $2.5 billion, that brings us to the point where we have almost 25 days of spending saved in the rainy day fund. And if you look at the median across the 50 states, and this is data from Pew, it's a little over 28 days. So because the General Assembly decided to put the $2.5 billion in the rainy day fund, we're very, very close to the median level.
We are talking with Stacy Garrity. Stacy is Pennsylvania's new state treasurer. We are now talking about the Pennsylvania budget. And Stacy, over the years that Tom Wolf has been governor of Pennsylvania, he has habitually overspent the budget. The General Assembly will pass a budget, say this is how much you have to spend. He spends more than that. The General Assembly then has to backfill the money with a supplemental. What has your department been able to do to keep an eye on this and try to hold this governor accountable to spending only those dollars that are actually approved by the legislature?
The first thing we're doing is we're going to shine a bright, shiny light right on that process. And so we have a transparency portal on our website. So we're adding a tab to that transparency portal, and it's going to be called Ledger 5, because Ledger 5 is where the dollars that we spend that are not appropriated, they run through that ledger. And so this will be live in a couple of weeks. So when you go to that tab, there'll be a very nice, easy explanation about Ledger 5 is, about what it can be used for, and then they will have basically their dials for the different state agencies. You know, you'll be able to click right on that and see where we've spent money that was not appropriated. So that's the first thing we're going to do.
Moving on from the budget, you have a number of programs that are meant to assist Pennsylvanians as they save for key mileposts in life, one of which is Keystone Saves. Tell us a bit about that program.
The pandemic has just showed us how important it is for people to have access to savings. And we all know as a nation, people just don't have enough saved for retirement. And particularly in Pennsylvania, we have just over 2 million people in the Commonwealth that work somewhere where their employer doesn't offer a retirement plan. So we know Social Security isn't enough to retire on. And on average, Pew Research shows that on average of our 67 counties, they need about $400 a month more than what's provided in Social Security. So we can't rely on government programs to meet our need in retirement. And we do know that what these unprepared retirees, it's going to cost the Commonwealth $14.5 billion in increased state social services and less tax collections of $1.4 billion because of reduced consumer spending. Now, that's between now and 2030. So studies show that people are 15 times more likely to save for retirement when they have that option to save through their workplace. So what I want to do is establish a secure way for people who work for companies without a retirement plan to start saving for their future. So we call it Keystone Save. So it would be established at the Pennsylvania Treasury Department, but managed by private sector partners. And, Loman, this is very important. Each account will be completely owned and controlled by the individuals who set them up. So that's exactly how our 529 college and career savings programs work. Individual accounts controlled by citizens who establish them. So employees can opt out, they can opt in, they can do whatever they want. They can take their Keystone Saves account with them from job to job. It's kind of works like a Roth IRA. So we're also, I want to mention, this will be the most business-friendly program in the nation because a lot of states are rolling this out. All it is a payroll deduction. That's it. There's no burden on businesses. They have to let employees know about it, but after that, it's just a payroll deduction, just like every other payroll deduction. So those are what I see as two critical factors for Keystone Saves: true individual control and no burden on business. So we're working with members of the General Assembly. We're trying to finalize the first draft of the bill and get it introduced, hopefully, you know, later in the summer.
You also mentioned the 529 savings plans. Those are very important from an educational point of view. Tell us a little bit about that.
Our college and career savings programs, that's a fantastic way for basically each parent can basically save $15,000 a year tax-free per child. So a total of $30,000, but you'd have to have two kids, of course. So that program is doing very, very well. It's actually 135% actuarial funded. So that's really good. We have over 260,000 account owners. And you would have thought, you know, we were a little concerned that during the pandemic people would stop saving, but they did. In fact, they continued to open accounts. And it's a very good program. And what I like to push now is it's not just for four-year programs. It's for technical colleges. It's for trades. It's for apprenticeships. When you travel across the state, we all know that employers say what they need is skilled labor. So the 529 program is an excellent way for people to get a trade.
We have been talking with Stacy Garrity. Stacy is the treasurer of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And Stacy, you've touched on a number of important programs and also places on your website that folks would be interested so that they can keep their eye on state government as well. Give us that website address once again, please.
patreasury.gov.
patreasury.gov. And we have been talking with the treasurer of Pennsylvania, Stacy Garrity. Stacy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Loman.
Since 1884, the Children's Home of Reading has provided a wide array of services to children and families in need. To learn more about the program, Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with the home's president and CEO, Dr. Vincent LaSorsa. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Dr. LaSorsa, for being a guest in the Lincoln Radio program.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So, Dr. LaSorsa, you're the president and CEO of the Children's Home of Reading. What was the inspiration for having this program in the city of Reading?
The Children's Home of Reading has been around for many years, almost 140 years, and it has started out as an orphanage and has changed throughout the years. I think one thing that has remained constant is our willingness and our ability to treat children who come to us for a variety of reasons. So we have been in place for a long time, and we continue to help kids, not only across the city of Reading, but also across the state of Pennsylvania.
It appears that you have a number of different locations. Where are those?
Primarily, we are in the city of Reading. That is where our main campus is, where we have our residential program where kids come and live with us. We have two schools there, one for our residential kids, one for our community kids. We have foster care and adoption there. So primarily in the city of Reading, but we also have operations in Schuylkill County and then also in the Lehigh Valley, the Bethlehem, Allentown, Easton area.
So as you mentioned, you've been around for 125 years, and I imagine the city of Reading was different at that time. Is there anything unique about the city of Reading now that speaks to continuing to have a program such as this? How is the city of Reading like every other city, or what's unique about Reading?
The city of Reading is very cultural. There's a lot that folks can get exposed to. People come from all over to the city of Reading. That also presents some difficulties as well. And, you know, as you know, it's been documented there's a lot of poverty and a lot of issues within the city. And we are there to really help in the adjustment of folks that come in and folks that are there, especially the children and adolescent population who might struggle. And, you know, English a lot of times is not their first language. And we really try to help with that adjustment to the city of Reading.
How many children are you serving, and does that number fluctuate?
Yes, the number fluctuates year to year. I'm going off of our 2020 numbers. We served about 1,100 kids, again, in a variety of probably almost 15 different programs, from our most restrictive, where kids actually live with us for a period of time, to our least restrictive, which are outpatient services, where kids might come to us for an hour or two or even up to 6 hours a day, but then they go home and reside at home with their families.
So with a program of this kind of expanse, it would require a lot of staff. Have you experienced similar kinds of challenges with staffing your organization as the rest of the country with the COVID?
Yes, absolutely. I think COVID has had an effect on all of us, all businesses, all work environments. And although it seems as though we're getting through it and are coming out on the other end, we're still seeing the ripple effects, and one of those being staffing.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. And my guest today is Dr. Vincent LaSorsa, the president and CEO of the Children's Home of Reading. Can you give us a couple of prototypes of the kind of children and issues that they bring with them that you serve?
Kids present with a variety of different issues, the most severe being that they suffered trauma in their early years, in their childhood. There could be abuse or neglect in their history. Those are the more serious ones that take some time to really treat and help the children kind of overcome them and develop coping strategies to deal with those issues. We also deal with kids who come from broken families who might be suffering from depression or anger-related impulses, kids who might be struggling attending school, some truancy issues or some social anxiety type issues. So a wide range of mental health issues that a kid might present with that we ultimately try to help in developing the coping skills necessary to be productive in our society.
Many of the programs that treat children at the point where they become adults, they move on, that the program can no longer accommodate them because of regulation or tradition or that kind of thing. What happens with a child that goes through your program and reaches the age of majority and is no longer eligible?
We treat children from the age of actually infants from birth really up to 18. We will continue to serve them until they're 21 if they're enrolled in a school program or still working on educational needs. Once they turn 21, you are correct in that they age out of the children's system, but it really is our job to be able to provide for them a discharge resource.
Do any of them qualify over time to recycle back into the program as staff or mentors?
We have had that happen. We have had kids in their teenage years who age out and then come back to us for employment, and we have hired them, and they've been excellent employees because they know, really, they know what some of the kids are dealing with because they've experienced it firsthand. Kind of amazing the number of folks that visit the children's home because of its 100 plus years of service that they'll come in and say, oh, we've, you know, I think I had a grandparent who was here. Can you look that up? And we go into our archives and we are able to find when, in fact, the person's relative was with the children's home and how long they were there and just some basic information. And it's really touching to the community.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Dr. Vincent LaSorsa, the president and CEO of the Children's Home of Reading. What kind of help do you need? And if somebody wants to volunteer or donate, how can they find you?
Children's Home of Reading is always in need of good folks that want to help the community, want to help kids and their families. Best to reach out to our website, the Children's Home of Reading, buildingkidslives.org. And again, the website is a great resource. We are always looking for really good people to want to help.
Well, again, this is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. Dr. LaSorsa, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest on the program. We appreciate you making time to speak with us, and good luck with your program.
Most conservative lawmakers say they support the Taxpayer Protection Act. It would limit annual spending increases to the rate of inflation plus population growth. But on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity says the new state budget far exceeds those limits.
On the night of June 25th at the PA State Capitol, one by one, members of the General Assembly stepped up to the microphones to congratulate themselves on completing negotiations with Governor Wolf on the 2021-22 state budget. Republicans and Democrats alike took turns touting what they saw as, quote, responsible decisions to increase taxpayer-funded investments in state program after state program, most notably the historic boost to public education funding sought by the governor. To be sure, not every member of the General Assembly was pleased about the outcome of this year's budget process. Numerous members cast no votes because, in their view, this budget didn't spend enough taxpayer dollars, especially more of the billions in federal funds sent to the Commonwealth under Biden's American Rescue Plan, approved earlier this spring along party lines in Congress. Spending that added trillions of dollars more to the already astronomical federal debt that generations of Pennsylvanians not yet born will be forced to pay. But the viewpoint that probably best reflects that of most of hardworking Pennsylvania taxpayers who will have to pay for this, quote, responsible state spending. Those who still have jobs and businesses after the Wolf administration's response to the pandemic devastated our economy was that of Representative Aaron Bernstein from Beaver County, who represents the 10th Legislative District, who cut through all the happy talk about this budget and delivered a needed dose of reality. He said, "When it comes to spending taxpayers' money, I don't think we ought to look at a budget and say it's not perfect, but it's good enough. This budget is an 8.8% increase in government spending, and that will set the stage for excessive borrowing and tax hikes when bailout money disappears. This budget does nothing to help our struggling local businesses or help to rebuild our economy, and I cannot ignore those glaring realities when it comes to other people's money. Harrisburg is really good at one thing, spending your money. They have proven time and time again they have no restraint when it comes to growing government and increasing spending. It's long past time we enact the Taxpayer Protection Act, and put in place constitutional spending limits that will permanently curb chronic overspending. You know, just weeks ago on May 18th, Pennsylvania voters had the opportunity to decide whether they wanted more control over how state government operates under emergency conditions. And their answer was a loud and clear yes, as they approved two constitutional amendments restoring checks and balances to the gubernatorial emergency declaration process. Now, the General Assembly should heed Representative Bernstein's words and put the Taxpayer Protection Act, which would constitutionally limit annual increases of state spending to the combined 3-year average of inflation and state population growth, before the voters for our consideration. Some around the state have called placing such amendments on the ballot an end run around the governor and, in this case, the General Assembly. But those observers seem to have forgotten that under the Commonwealth's Constitution, the people, not the politicians they temporarily employ, are sovereign, and that those citizens have the ultimate authority under that Constitution to alter the manner in which they are governed. This legislative session, the Taxpayer Protection Act is House Bill 71 and Senate Bill 286. Please visit AmericansForProsperity.ivolunteers.com. Members return the third week of September, and we're laying the expectation throughout the summer that Taxpayer Protection Act must be on the calendar for a final House vote. The only end run that's been taking place has been the annual parade of accounting maneuvers and budgetary tricks that our elected leaders have designed to allow them to avoid the difficult choices needed to arrest the chronic overspending cited by Representative Bernstein. They, like so many of the taxpayers they represent, can see that Pennsylvania's current fiscal path is unsustainable, and that keeping the status quo in place only guarantees the passage of more, quote, responsible budgets that do nothing but accelerate our increasingly downward fiscal and economic trajectory. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHSK-FM in Bloomsburg, WIOO-FM, Red 102.3-FM, and WHYL-FM in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.